Now that's a good scoop. That's why they call you Scoops.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
Hey, welcome to the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody, episode number 22. And today we're joined not only by Chris Cody, but a very special guest. Juju Gotti is in with us today.
You were about to say in the building, but then you realize we're in Zoom. So you're like, yes. He's here.
He's, what is Atlanta from here? You're about 1,200 miles away or whatever the distance is.
Or about 12 billion corona cases away.
Yes. Oh, man. So this is an unusual episode. Juju's going to be with us most of the show today as like a guest co-host. And we're going to have some fun because, Juju, you were on the show early in our podcast when your album Dark Nights came out. And so our listeners know you from the podcast, but mostly from the Levitard show. And lately, you've been in charge of the Levitard Show social media.
Yeah.
What's that been like?
It's shocking to see that no matter how random the topic is or bland the topic is, there's always someone who comes in with a Trump tweet or how come Trayvon Martin? It's like, whoa, sheesh, I just posted the Miami Heat dancing, you know? It's like they're all thinking Dan is tweeting this. So they're just, oh, you liberal this and you don't like that. How dare you? Black Lives Matter. It's like, I'm a black guy. I tweeted it, you know.
That's
I
crazy.
Was gonna say that.
By the way, how's that album doing? If you won't promote yourself, I'll promote for you. It's called Dark Nights. How's it doing?
It's doing way better than I anticipated. Of course, the pandemic has factored into it because everyone's home. But compared to my last songs I've dropped and stuff like that, it's like maybe 500% increase of listens and downloads. And that's definitely a blessing. I got another one coming as well. Coming soon. It's just I'm so scared to go to the studio and be around people that I'm just holding off for a while, you know what I mean? But it's definitely there and prepared.
Tease us a little bit.
On the next one, there's going to be a Dan Stanzik part two. It's already done. Dan Stanzik part two.
Is this a world exclusive that the Greg Cody Show is getting right now?
Yeah, they are. Back to back, Drake style. He didn't respond, so I'm back to back in them. Dan Stanzik part two coming soon. Now that's a good scoop. That's why they call you Scoops.
Good. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yes.
Yes, sir.
Can we just talk about this Lou Williams story? I mean, that's what I want to get into.
I
want to just like do the whole show on this. So like for the people that don't know, okay, so like let's set this up for the audience. So he's in the bubble with the Clippers. He gets a leave to go to a funeral, I believe I read. And then he ends up getting photographed by some rapper, was it? Was it an Atlanta strip club?
It was here in Atlanta.
So we go to Juju, who is in the city, like Juju reporting live from Atlanta. Juju, what can you tell us about this story?
This story is bonkers, totally nuts. How do you go to a funeral and end up in a strip club? I will never understand.
I mean,
not only that, the rapper who took a picture with you, how do you let him take the picture? Like, I would have smacked the phone out of his hand before he even put it on camera mode.
That is the conversation that I want to be a fly on the wall. I want to see, like, does Lou Williams text this guy like, yo, blowing up my spot, man. What the like?
And then the guy was like, oh, this is an old picture. I was just rehashing all the time. But he has an NBA certified mask on. They didn't give those out to a week ago.
That is the move right there. That is the move. That's an old pic. I just missed my boy Lou.
Right, when his mask says NBA 2020 startup.
It like literally said July 22nd, like on it.
Now,
welcome back, WNBA.
Before we crucify Lou Williams, is there any chance that the funeral was at the strip club? Because, for a second, what if the deceased was the owner of the strip club? and he wanted his funeral at the club. I mean, come on, let's give Lou the benefit of the doubt here.
The part that, like, obviously this story is just kind of funny because it just, like, I don't know. Like, I know someone died with the funeral. That part's not funny. But just this story is a funny story. But let's step aside and, like, I could never go to a strip club right now. Like,
right.
I guess there's just people out there that don't think this thing is real because, like, if I was in a club right now with, like, hundreds of people around me, I would be so terrified. It's like my nightmare right now.
Exactly. I can't even imagine being around someone. Like, so my homeboy, he came to my house the other day. He knocked on my door. I told him out the window. I said, bro, what are you doing? Like, leave it on the porch. Like, please. And he got a little mad or whatever. I'm like, hey, I don't care. Be mad at me. Friendship over. I'd rather lose your friendship than get corona. My worst nightmare.
Yeah.
I literally can't believe it.
I saw in Houston there was a drive-through strip club, like this one strip club, like you can like drive through and you get like two songs max, and I guess you're throwing dollars like out the window. I'm actually not kidding, like that's like a legit thing.
Yeah, I think that as well. That's crazy. That's literally crazy. Also, the NBA, they were so like, oh, we're gonna come back. It was a big damper on the messaging that was already established, like, which I feel like was insulting in the first place, like. Right. Oh, we're going to come back, but we don't want to take any attention off the movement. It's like, I can walk and chew gum at the same time, bro. Go shoot some hoops.
Right. You know? Exactly.
I can keep my wear intact, but it just makes it more ridiculous seeing people do that kind of stuff.
Plus, sports is integrating the BLM movement and social justice and all that stuff in the return. I mean, you know, baseball is doing it of all sports, you know, with MLB and BLM. And, you know, it's been like a big love in all of a sudden between sports and social justice, which is great. I mean, it's one of the good things to come from this crazy 2020 is that sports is really rising up and becoming an outspoken part of all this.
Now, I want to talk about opening day baseball. Greg, did you see Fauci's opening pitch that he threw?
It's been the highlight of the season for me. I thought Fauci's pitch was spectacular. It only missed the plate by about a quarter of a mile.
What about the thought, Juju, I want to get your take on this. What about the theory that Fauci didn't want the catcher to touch the same ball that he touched, so he threw it just like towards the dugout? Because he's like, I don't want my germs to get to the catcher because I'm so anti this pandemic that I'm going to help him out and throw it towards the dugout. What do you guys think? Any thought?
I think that's a kick, save, and a beaut when it comes to how horrible of a thrower you are. He throws just about as bad as the little kid from the Sandlot who would just run the ball from outfield to – he should have did that.
Smalls. That would have been so funny. He just ran it to the catcher. Who were the
right.
– there's some bad ones. 50 Cent. Had a terrible first pitch. I'm trying to think back of some of the words. Baba Booey, the Howard Stern producer. I don't know if people know him, but he had a really historic bad one. I really want to do it. I tried to fight for it on Greg Cody night. I feel like I would just heem a strike right in there.
Well,
that's
it's,
what they
you know,
think.
Yeah, they
as someone
that.
As someone who has done it.
Here we go.
Look, I have a little bit of athleticism. I mean, I have played sports.
You do.
And
yes.
For me, if you have any athleticism and you practice a couple of times, what is your excuse for throwing it so far off?
The moment getting you.
I don't know, man.
There's no excuse.
I'd rather see an underhand toss, like, Rick Barry style than anything else.
or Rookie of the Year, the mom, just floated.
Right.
Which is a little side note. That's the worst ending to a sports movie in history. The big climactic scene where the big hitter's up to bat against Henry Rowan Gardner, and the way he gets him out is just by floating the pigeon. Like, are you kidding me? Anyways, I digress.
That thing would have still been in the air.
That's what I'm saying.
I want to all this talk about pitching and baseball. Something is in my craw regarding a particular word. And you all know I'm sort of like an amateur etymologist. I love wordplay and the origin of phrases and idioms and all that. And so this has been bothering me. why do we call left-handed pitchers southpaws? Righties are never called northpaws. And why are we giving human beings paws anyway, like dogs?
Wouldn't it be maybe west? Shouldn't it be west paw? Because if like, you're a lefty, you throw from over here.
Yes, here's – I did a little research. Southpaw originated in the late 1800s, and one theory was that baseball diamonds are configured so the batter is facing east to avoid the sun, meaning the pitcher is facing west so that his left paw is on the south side. But here's what bothers me. Directionally, we think of north as up and south as down, with east and west in the middle on either side. So the hands are found at the mid. Stay with me here. Okay. The hands are found at the midpoint of the
tough
body.
To follow. Like, okay, keep going.
On either side, not north where the head is or south where the feet are. So the lefty pitcher is an east paw or a west paw, depending on which way he's facing.
So my feet would be the south paw.
Yes.
Right. They should definitely change that. Like with the Me Too movement and all that. Why is it still called a softball for women? Like,
wow.
Like that's demeaning, you know?
It is. I'd never thought of that.
I mean, I think those two things, someone could run for president on those two platforms right there. Let's get rid of southpaw, and let's get rid of calling it soft. I mean, the softball thing, see, why is it called softball? The balls aren't soft.
Right, exactly. What are you saying? Like, sure. The pitchers are soft? Like, oh, no. Like, that's problematic.
What are you lying? Well, I'm going to start calling righties northpaws, and that'll make me feel better. That's gonna, in print, look for that in print, Miami Herald readers. Right-handed pitchers are now northpaws.
Nice.
All right, let's get this going. Let's have some fun here. Let's bring it back. We're going to do Greg's mail sack.
It's Greg's mail sack. Let's pull your question from the bag and let Greg answer back.
Juju, don't get freaked out by this. It's M-A-I-L. So like we're invisible. Okay. Like an old postman with a mail sack just scurrying on in here, and he's going to ask some questions from Twitter. All right.
I was about to say, that's what she said.
Mail. All right, so we're going – I also – Juju's got a couple questions too that we're going to sprinkle in. First one comes in from Peter Morton. He says, other than the PFPI gala, what is your most cherished memories with your sons? I had to make the first question about me.
Wow. I would say sports related. You know, I coached a lot of Christopher and Michael's teams growing up. I went to most of the games to sit in the stands if I wasn't coaching. I announced Christopher's baseball games in high school. So those are nice memories. And also... we went on a lot of family vacations as a family, and some of them involved, you know, going to far-flung ballparks in Oakland or St. Louis or all around Atlanta, all around the country, really.
The thing that I thought of with you coaching me as a kid, now, you were a pretty good coach. Baseball, you knew your X's and O's. Basketball, like, I feel like you were strong. I would say soccer was your weakness as a coach, as a parent coach, because literally, I'm going to reenact what Greg Cody used to do and what he would do. This is it. This was the extent of Greg Cody coaching soccer. Juju, what jersey color are we this season? Just pick a random color.
Red.
All right, so we're red jerseys. So this is Greg Cody coaching. Go to the ball, Red! Go to the ball, Red! That was like the extent of Greg Cody coaching soccer. And you played soccer. So, like, what's up with that?
Well, I was tactically not a great soccer coach. I was a good gung-ho guy. You know, I was a cheerleader coach, but tactically, it was not my strength, I will admit.
Will Ferrell and kicking and screaming.
That is a deep Will Ferrell cut right there. Not a lot of people know that movie. If you have not seen Kicking and Screaming with Will Ferrell, you have to see it. That movie is so funny. That is such a good reference right there. Juju, what was your best sport? Did you play any sports growing up?
Absolutely. I played basketball. I also played in college. Like, I was, you know what I mean?
Did you have aspirations? Like, what was at one point where you like, let's do this. I'm going to the NBA.
I thought I was going to the NBA or my life would be incomplete. Like, I was that guy until I went to college and I went to a party. And I was like, girls. My NBA dreams went down the toilet with my GPA.
There you go. All right, moving on here. This is from Brad Spinner. He goes, I assume that being a garbage man or cemetery caretaker is part of your shtick for the show. But what else would you really have liked to have given a try?
Wow. I did want to be those two things. That's not a shtick. And the third thing was bus driver, school or public bus driver. I used to like those big Bluebird buses with the flat steering wheels. I love that. I was like, wow, I'd love to drive one of those.
So if the steering wheel was at an angle, you don't want to do it. You only want to do it if the steering wheel is flat.
The flat wheel where you had to really raise your elbows, that always appealed to me visually. But the thing I wanted to be as a kid, I would say into high school, was a radio disc jockey. Back in the day, classic days of classic rock, and I always fancied myself a DJ on either a rock or a country station, or maybe what R&B or soul station, where I could play. You know, my favorite group in high school was guys like Al Green and the Staple Singers, and that's the kind of music that I grew up on. So the idea of being a DJ and being able to play that on the radio really appealed to me.
What was your DJ name going to be?
Oh, I didn't get that far. You know, I don't know. I probably would have had to come up with a DJ name, because Greg Cody is not a name that sounds like a DJ.
DJ Scoops.
There you go. Scoops.
That would have been ahead of its time. All right, let's go to a Juju question now. Juju, what do you want to ask my dad?
If you were young and like in your 20s, 19, around the age of an NBA player, and your girlfriend just so happened to work at the Disney World Resort or wherever the NBA players are staying.
I like it.
Would you panic in this time when she's all around NBA players 24/7 who haven't seen the women in however long? Like me personally, I would probably break up with her just because, you know what I mean? Or either something of the facet. But how would you treat that situation?
Probably very badly. I do think I have a jealous bone in my body. But then again, I'm a very trustworthy person, a very trusting person. So I don't know how I'd do that, but it would not be an ideal situation. That's for sure.
Right. Imagine if she was like the bartender at the bar for the NBA players.
Even
she was
worse.
A cute woman. Right. Yeah.
She couldn't do anything. If she was a maid going in rooms and making beds, that wouldn't make me feel real good either.
If you love me, you will quit your job, basically.
Something like that. Yeah, that thought would occur to me.
Didn't mom have a boyfriend at the time in college, and you kind of like swooped in and stole her from him?
Yeah. I mean, and the opposite was true. This I don't feel real good about this, but your mother was in a long time relationship with a guy. I was in a long time relationship with my girlfriend at the time. We'd been going together for a couple of years, and then your mother and I met, and
you guys both were just like, that's it, I'm done with mine, you're done with yours. That's actually kind of really sweet.
Player, well, player.
Look at
it
that.
It didn't make me feel real good, because
which of those did you break yours off cleaner, or did she break her? Like, which one of those was the messiest breakup?
I think your mother's, because they had been together for like 7 years. I mean, they were like, why aren't you guys married yet? You know, that type of thing. Whereas my relationship was probably the longest relationship I'd had, but it was still just a couple of years.
Did you even tell her? Just let her? You probably still go with her somewhere in her head. Just stop calling her.
Yeah. No, I explained myself face to face. I don't remember exactly how I put it, because it's been a long time ago. But
did you have insecurities about mom rekindling such a long, like, if she was with this relationship for 7 years, were you like, was there insecurities at the beginning of, are you still talking to him? I guess you didn't have, there wasn't cell phones back then. What was she really like? Was she dipping a feather in ink, like writing him like a note? Like, how, were you worried about her still contacting him?
A feather in ink. I like that visual. Yes, to be plain, to put it plainly, yes. And the weird thing is, to this day, your mother.
You're still worried about it. You're still worried about it.
No, not at all. But to this day, your mother and her ex still have a little bit of a relationship, you know, Facebook friends, that type of thing. Whereas me and my ex have not seen or talked to each other, even via social media, decades.
Have you tried to track her down? Not like to talk to her, but have you looked, like typed in her name on Facebook just to see what's up with her? He's coughing. Greg Cody's coughing. No, don't mind him.
edit that out. I'm embarrassed to say that, yes, I have.
That's not embarrassing. I think that's very normal.
I have Googled her name.
And who's winning? And who's winning at life, you or her?
We know the answer to that. Don't answer that.
Who's winning at life?
Does someone have a tattoo of her on their body? If not, she loses.
Yeah, I'm telling you what. That's right on top of my resume, Juju Gotti.
But Greg, you say there, no, that's not why. But that's why you look her up on Facebook. Like, that's what you're doing there. You're not doing it to actually speak to her. You're doing that to see what's up with her, see how she's doing.
Make sure she's with Mary LeBron James.
Right, make sure she's not with LeBron.
You know, I was curious. You know, I mean, I'm in my 60s now. You know, you don't assume that she's even alive. I wanted to see how she's doing. And,
right, this took a dark turn.
You know, she seems to be doing pretty well. She is in the North Carolina area and works at a college, and good for her.
You actually did. You made me think of this. Didn't Mom's ex like stay with us one time?
I think so. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I remember your mother and I and her ex going to some carnival or something once and walking around laughing, drinking beer. And,
you guys ever?
You are a trustworthy man.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he and I have played tennis together.
Oh my God. How kinky is this relationship? Be honest.
it never got to what you're imagining. But, I used to be on friendly terms with him.
They're pretty sure this is the plot of the movie. Never mind.
Yeah. All right, let's get off this topic, by the way.
This was really good, honestly. This was I really enjoyed this topic. That was a Juju question, too. That was really good. All right, this next one, we've been going long here because we're having so much fun, so we're not going to have time for too many more. Let's do Matt Anaya says, your top 10 Miami athletes. Hey, Matt, you're in luck. Not only this is Greg's mail sack, we're in the middle of a bit. We have another bit called Greg's Top 10. Let's do that right now.
Greg's Top 10. 10. Greg's Top 10.
More imaging. Look at this. So much lazy podcast imaging. We have it for any question you need. Greg, give us your top 10 Miami athletes of all time.
Okay. We're going to be quick with this.
Yes, very quick.
Number 10, Udonis Haslam.
Okay.
Hey.
Number 9, Pavel Bure.
Really?
Number 8.
Oh, my God. Ahead of Udonis? Okay. I'll react to these later. Keep going.
Number 8, Alonzo Mourning.
Okay.
Number 7, Giancarlo Stanton. Number 6, Zach Thomas.
Okay.
Number 5, LeBron James.
Okay.
Number 4, Jason Taylor. Number 3, Larry Zonka. Number 2, Dan Marino. And number 1, Wayne Wade.
First of all, Miguel Cabrera is the best Marlin in history. He should be ahead of Giancarlo. I cannot believe you have Udonis Haslam below Pavel Bure. I mean, I get you want to throw in your token Panthers player, but just put him at 10. You got to go Haslam a little higher there.
Pavel Bure, for 2 years in a row, had like 50 goals.
Yeah, 2 years. For 2 years. That's it.
Right, and Udonis has had the longevity, but, let's be honest. The last several years of his career, he's a bit player.
Let's be Udonis.
Let's be honest about Udonis.
All right. Yeah, maybe he should have been higher on my list, but
He should have been.
He's missed 305.
Exactly. So he's missed. Is Pavel Mr. 305? The best thing Pavel Bure ever did was marry DJ Tanner. Anyway,
I have no idea what that means.
Who is DJ Tanner?
Yeah, it might have been his brother that married DJ Tanner. Whatever. One of the Burrays married DJ Tanner. I'm having a real banner episode. Juju, you want to ask Greg another question? You got another one for him?
Okay. What is your favorite sports jersey of all time? If you can only have one.
I like that.
That's an easy answer. It would be a 1967 Red Sox jersey with the number 8 and the name that barely fit across, Yastrzemski. That would be my jersey.
Yes.
Yes. I was such a fan of Yaz that the first cat my wife and I ever owned when we got married and had our first little apartment, we named the cat Yaz.
How is Yaz?
Dead for about 30 years.
Damn.
God rest his soul.
All right. I think this is by far, I think we need to bring Juju into every Greg's Mail Sack segment because this is by far the best one we've done so far. So that's about it. We've gone long. Greg, that's it for Greg's Mail Sack.
That's what you said.
Hey.
Hey. All right. Let's say goodbye right now to Juju Gotti, our friend from Atlanta, our great friend Juju. Really appreciate you hanging in the podcast for pretty much most of the episode today.
Check out his album.
Oh, yeah, Dark Nights is his album, and look for some new music from him soon as well, we hear. So, Juju, all the best to you, man. Stay healthy and stay cloistered.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me. I'll be girding it up here in Atlanta, and I appreciate everything you've ever done. You know what I mean? Keep doing it.
All right. Stay well, my friend. And right now, let's get into a special guest. He's an author named Thomas Wolfe. Just wrote a book with a really long title. It's called The Called Shot, Babe Ruth, the Chicago Cubs, and the Unforgettable Major League Baseball Season of 1932.
But the real thing we get to the bottom of here is Babe Ruth black?
We do talk to him about that. And this interview interests me because you could make an argument that, and you'd include guys like LeBron James and Tiger Woods and Tom Brady, but you could make an argument that to this day, Babe Ruth is the largest, most iconic sports figure in American history. You could argue that. So let's bring in Thomas Wolfe.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Before we dive into this book, I have to ask you the question that's on everyone's minds. Was Babe Ruth black?
I don't address that completely in the book. I think there's no real evidence that that's the case. But that rumor or idea certainly existed at the time and existed among the players he played against. So there were racist taunts towards him. He was very offended by it. He almost got in a fight with the New York Giants' Johnny Rawlings, who used that term, you know, used a derogatory term in referring to him. And also, he almost got in a fight with Ty Cobb about it. So he was very sensitive to that suggestion.
I'm wondering, Tom, what fascinated you and enthralled you enough about this man and this season to write about it?
My first inclination was to write about the season because I thought it was such a terrific baseball season. I mean, so many Hall of Famers were involved, two great pennant races. And of course, the climax was a World Series with the called shot and with two iconic franchises. So there were just so many story threads that appealed to me. It wasn't my intention initially to really focus on Babe Ruth, but you can't write a book about a season in which Babe Ruth played without the book being about Babe Ruth.
A focal point of the book, of course, is the main title of it, The Called Shot, one of the most iconic and talked about gestures in the history of sports as well. It's a myth and a mystery, which makes it all that much more fascinating to me. Do you dare reach a conclusion on whether it was a fact that he gestured and called that home run?
I think it's a fact that he gestured, and I think it's a fact that he predicted a home run. I think where the reality breaks down into myth is whether or not he pointed to the exact spot he hit the ball. But that's, to me, that's secondary. The important thing to me and the most dramatic thing and the most remarkable thing is that in that particular environment, 50,000 Cub fans screaming at him, Franklin Roosevelt in the stands, Judge Landis in the stands, Cub players yelling at him, fans throwing lemons at him, that he was able to focus, choose the pitch he was going to hit, and then hit it 450 feet. I mean, that's remarkable.
One of the things that fascinated me and surprised me was the hostility of Cubs fans and even Cubs players toward Babe Ruth, because I sort of grew up with the assumption that here's this beloved figure, universally loved. And here he was toward the end of his career, where I imagined a national appreciation tour, that whenever Babe Ruth came to bat, it was a standing ovation. And it was quite the opposite in Game 3 of that World Series. What was the context that made him so vilified at that time?
I think it goes back actually to earlier in the season, when the Cubs acquired Mark Koenig from the Pacific Coast, from the minors, brought him up. Koenig was a key player for the Cubs during the 32 pennant race. But then the Cubs only voted him a half share of World Series money. And Koenig, of course, had been a teammate of Ruth and Gehrig's back in the 20s on the great 1927 team, for example. So Ruth, I think, got things started in New York, kind of trash-talking Cub players. And that just carried over into Chicago. As for the fans, I think the fans in Wrigley Field were delighted to see Babe Ruth. And, you know, he's both a hero and an icon, and he's a competitor. You know, he's the big bam playing on the other side. So I think he just, everything I've read about his appearance in Wrigley Field that day, even during fielding practice, they were throwing lemons at him. They were taunting him, and he was giving it right back to the fans. I mean, he loved to create a scene. And I think it started with Mark Koenig, but it just continued. And I think Ruth was able to build it. He's a performance artist.
Why did fans of that time waste perfectly good food like lemons and onions? What, it seems a crime. Was that a thing back then, lemons and onions? Where'd that come from?
I don't really know where that came from, but in the accounts that sports writers wrote of that game, apparently they brought lemons and oranges to the ballpark to throw at Red Ruth. I mean, I guess it's more benign than throwing bottles or rocks, but I don't know if it was a thing elsewhere or not. It's a fascinating little tidbit.
We're talking with Thomas Wolfe, the author of the new book, The Called Shot, Babe Ruth, the Chicago Cubs, and the Unforgettable Major League Baseball Season of 1932. I'm wondering, Tom, in your research, what did you learn about Babe Ruth that surprised you or that you didn't know?
I knew the outlines of his life and career, of course. I think as I researched more, I became aware of what an incredibly good athlete he was. Not only was he a terrific pitcher, I mean, he probably would have gone to the Hall of Fame as a left-handed pitcher if he'd never hit a home run. He was that good as a pitcher. But as I did the research, I also discovered he was a terrific bunter. Until his later years, when he was kind of overweight and slowed down by physical excesses, he was an excellent outfielder. So I don't think he gets credit for being as good an athlete as he was. He was a really good golfer. He loved to bowl. I mean, he was good at a lot of things. And there's a kind of a popular image of him, I think, as being overweight, eating too much, drinking too much, socializing too much, etc. But he was an intense competitor. He got in fights with his teammates if they didn't hustle. I mean, that was, I suppose, the thing that I found most remarkable as I did the research, is what a complete player and competitor he was.
As I know it, he was a prodigious man. Drinking, eating, whatever he did, he tended to do it a lot. Is that what you know of Babe Ruth? Was he a big drinker? Was he a womanizer? What was he like off the field?
He was certainly a drinker and eater and a womanizer off the field, at least up until the time that he married his second wife, Claire, in the late 20s. And she really did calm him down, I think. She accompanied him sometimes on road trips. And I think her presence and her management of their family finances probably sobered him a little bit in a number of ways. You mentioned him socializing up in Harlem. And, of course, he also barnstormed with African-American players, the Negro League players. And his daughter, many years later, claimed that the reason Ruth never got a managerial job was because he would have insisted on having the major leagues integrated. So the racial aspect of Ruth really hasn't been fully developed, I don't think. The person who's done the best job is Jane Levy in her most recent book. I think it's called Big Fella. Where she has a whole section on the mythology of Ruth and being African-American and his connection to the community.
I read once, I think it was in Sports Illustrated, I don't remember how recent it was, but by the time he had turned 8 years old, Babe Ruth had already chewed tobacco and drank whiskey and was once sent to live at an industrial school for boys, a sort of a Catholic reform school, because he was thought at that time to be incorrigible. Was his childhood that wild?
His childhood was pretty wild. I mean, I think by today's terms, we would say he grew up in a somewhat dysfunctional family. His father ran a bar, and, you know, Babe, as a 5, 6, 7-year-old, was in and out of that bar and running around the streets. And I'm sure the stories about whiskey and cigarettes are true. And he was very, I think he did have a streak of incorrigibility that was, you know, brought under control when he went to St. Mary's Industrial School. He came under the influence of Father Matthias there, who really taught him baseball. While he was there, Ruth was actually being trained to be a tailor. That would have been his profession if he hadn't latched onto baseball.
A tailor?
Yeah, can you imagine Babe Ruth at the sewing machine?
No, to put it bluntly, no, yeah. I cannot. Thomas, before we let you go, I'm curious, how do you feel about the candy bar named after Babe Ruth? Is it is it the best thing ever, or is it grossly overrated?
I think it's overrated, and I think he sued the manufacturer. I don't think he got an endorsement from it.
Thanks again, Thomas, and best of luck with the book.
Okay, thank you very much. Really All enjoyed right. it.
Hey, let's welcome back the Mount Gregmore name game, the E edition. This is my favorite part of the podcast and Christopher's least favorite, which makes it sort of a fun dynamic, I think. Why do you keep hating on Mount Gregmore?
Because you're determined to make it as uninteresting as possible.
All right, let's see if we can do that again. You know, we count down the top 5 U.S. first names starting with the letter E. Over the past 100 years, then bring you the Mount Gregmore of whatever is the most popular. So, let's start. Number 5, Emma. Number 4, Emily. Number 3, Eric. Number 2, Edward. And the number 1 E name, Elizabeth. The Mount Gregmore of all time, Elizabeth.
This has to be a boring list. Okay. I mean, the only famous Elizabeths I can think of off the top of my head are just like the Queen Elizabeths.
All right, why are you spoiling my Mount Gregmore? listen, first of all, Elizabeths only. No Liz, no Betty. Only Elizabeths are welcome to Mount Gregmore. First, our honorable mention, Elizabeth Frankenstein. That's right. In the classic 1935 film Bride of Frankenstein, the bride was named Elizabeth.
So let me get this straight.
Yeah,
we can't have abbreviated Elizabeths like Liz or right. Betty.
No Betty Ford, sorry.
But we can have fake Elizabeths.
Yes. Now, here we go. The number 5 Elizabeth of all time. She was the English poet of the 19th century. She was the one who wrote, "How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach when feeling out of sight." How do I love thee? Sonnet 43, maybe the most famous poem by, of course, Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
Please don't read something for every person, especially
number 4.
Especially if it's something nobody's ever heard of.
Oh, nobody's ever heard of How Do I Love Thee? Let me count the ways.
I have it.
Okay, well, number 4. Anybody who watched sitcoms in the 1960s into the early 70s knew and loved the character Samantha Stevens, who starred in Bewitched. Alas, the actress would die of colon cancer at only 62. R.I.P. Elizabeth Montgomery.
Jeez, way to just bring that one down. I actually had that one. I did a brief list of Elizabeths, and I was like, the lady from Bewitched. How about
good
that?
Good for you. All right.
And that, folks, is going to be the highlight of this list right there for you.
Well, you know, when you start with Elizabeth Frankenstein, you can only go downhill. Number 3. She's the U.S. senator who ran hard for the presidential nomination this year. Might or might not be a Native American. It's Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren, most likely the youngest Elizabeth to make an appearance here.
Yeah, I think you're right. Number 2. She was born Elizabeth Alexandra Mary Windsor 94 years ago. The world has known her for the past 69 years as the Queen of England. And the UK. Elizabeth II.
This is so bad. Why aren't we picking other names? Elizabeth is not an entertaining name.
Elizabeth was number one.
You realize you've done four of these so far, or five if you count the honorable mention. And I am just sitting here. None of this is like, I'm not laughing. I'm not learning.
I'm just
hearing you talk about random people named Elizabeth.
And number one, the number one Elizabeth ever born. She was a businesswoman. She was a humanitarian. She famously was married 8 times to 7 different men. She most famously was an Academy Award winner who starred in films like Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and Cleopatra, the one, the only, Elizabeth Taylor.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's controversial because I think most people would have Queen Elizabeth on that list, not me, Elizabeth Taylor.
Like, even Elizabeth Taylor, like, I know she's an actress from a long time ago, but it just does nothing for me.
Okay, well, you know, it's my podcast. It does nothing. Look, we had a little humor, Elizabeth Frankenstein.
That was honestly the best part. Like, that was it. Your honorable mention was the best one. That should have been that should have been number one at least. Like, if you're gonna,
I want this to be a legitimate list.
But it's just boring.
Now,
we're doing a podcast.
Okay, you know what's fun? Next week, right? E. What follows E? F. F is controversial.
F you.
No, we're gonna have to improvise F, and here's why. I've been reading a top five because it's the top five of all the E's that appear in the top 100 overall. Well, in the F's, for the first time, there weren't five. There were only two. So we're going to have two F names, and then we're going to be able to improvise on the other three. Your dream come true. So stay tuned for the F's next week.
Joy.
All right. Another successful Mount Gregmore.
That's debatable.
Hey, thanks to our special guest, Juju Gotti, who spent a long time in the pod with us today. Thanks to author Thomas Wolfe. Hey, rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. And we really appreciate your support. Our podcast family is one of the most loyal in the pod kingdom, and we couldn't do it without you all. So we'll see you again next week.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.